Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truths Podcast. Man, it is so much going on this week between the draft, the playoffs of the NBA, NHL. It's a ton of sports going on. You got the heating up a little bit there in MLB. What more could you ask for? Whole bunch to talk about. We'll start out with, remember, we are on YouTube now at the Gospel STP. And also remember that when my cohort here, Mr. BK Wins, is in the building, that means that you're going to get some picks towards the end of the show that you need to stick around for because they are legit money. Let's go right ahead and hop into it. I'm your host, Zay, the Fantasy Football Fiend. And as always, my guy, BK. Holla at the people, BK.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, look, I just wanted to give that disclaimer at the beginning, just in case we have a few fans that don't make it to the end of the show. That's where the money is. That's where the payoff is. Stick with us. Also, if you have not joined the Facebook group, tons of information there, tons of additional content there. That's the Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. And let's just go right ahead and hop right into it. Good word of the week. What we got up first, BK?
Sure. So, to the association, NBA playoff results and reactions now that we've had some results. In the East, the four series so far, Cavs lead the Heat 2-0. Celtics lead the Magic 2-0. The Pacers easily handling the Bucks 2-0. Game three is we're recording this going on between the Knicks and the Pistons, currently tied 1-1. In the West, we have Oklahoma City have absolutely destroyed Memphis 2-0. The other three series tied 1-1, Golden State, Houston, Lakers, T-Wolves, and the Nuggets and the Clippers all 1-1. What are your reactions to the first couple games so far of the NBA postseason?
Well, I need Memphis to fight back. Like, what in the world is going on right now? Like, OKC is good. They have been great during the regular season. We wanted to see if they'd be able to kind of keep their foot on the gas come postseason. They're doing what they're supposed to do. But Memphis, like, look, right now this is looking like a sweep, and that's putting it lightly. Like, it's not even a well-fought sweep. Like, this is a I don't even know why you showed up type of a situation right now. You can't really be mad at the Magic. Same predicament, but happy to be there. I don't know if anyone would have even said Celtics in five in this matchup. This was probably a sweep before it got started. Just respectfully. I don't know if you add respectfully after that, if it matters, but just putting it out. Cavs Heat, another one. Like, the Cavs have looked amazing through the regular season. The Heat don't really have a go guy at this point. They have a good group of guys, but, I mean, who's the person that's going to bring it in when you need it the most. They don't have the Jimmy Butler replacement. They just got a bunch of guys right now. And that's okay because you made it to the playoffs, you know, with a hodgepodge or motley crew, if you will. And I kind of really feel like they're in the process of kind of having stepping stones. The issue is, though, with the Heat, and we'll talk about this off season and all that kind of good stuff, but they aren't really going to be in the market for free agents because most free agents don't really want to deal with that environment. So now Pacers Bucks, that one is a little surprising because although the Pacers are the better team, I didn't see the Bucks just not doing much of anything. Like, this isn't really what I expected from them. Knicks Pistons. Yo, Detroit is nice with it. Like they are. I didn't think they would match up with the Knicks as well as they are, but like they're taking advantage of their opportunity here and they're playing to their strengths. Kay Cunningham is a beast. And Schroeder, he was a guy that was booted around, like, and ended up falling into a place where his skill set is needed. Like he fits in perfectly with this group of guys, and they needed kind of like that veteran presence. In order to Tobias Harris was doing his thing. Like that series is probably one of the most entertaining series right now, humble opinion. Now, if we're looking at Golden State, man, look, I saw less violence in WrestleMania than I've seen in this series so far. I mean, like, I understand letting them play, but at some point in time, you got to blow the whistle. Like, it's getting ridiculous out there. And Jimmy Butler getting hurt is, that's a, man, I just hope it was the rest of that game and not for many other games, because he's the best player on that team now. Like, it showed that Kuminga should have had a lot more minutes leading up to this, because he can't do what you haven't allowed him to do all season, because the guy that you wanted in the game is hurt. That's just not gonna, that's not gonna work out well. So the Lakers and Wolves, the Lakers and five, nothing has changed. A little bit of a hiccup game one. Game two, no problem. I think game two is a little bit more indicative of how the series will go. Lakers and five. Denver versus the Clippers. This is another really entertaining series, and I think people forgot how good Kawhi Leonard and James Harden are when healthy. And they're gonna be a lot for anybody to handle. And they match up well against Denver. So I can see that one going down to the wire as far as games are concerned. So that's kind of where I am right now with the NBA. It's an interesting first round on one hand, and then you have the polar opposite of, okay, we might as well just go ahead and let this one go so no one gets hurt in the second round of the team that we know is going to win. So that's kind of the different opinions that I have with what's going on right now.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So in the East, you know, no surprise, the Cavs and the Celtics are taking care of business. I know game two were a little bit closer for the Cavs and the Celtics than they would like. Cavs had to kind of hold on for dear life against Miami in game two before pulling away very, very late. The Celtics without Tatum won by 9 on the road, but still, you know, were able to win by almost double digits without, you know, Tatum playing. Both those teams have a significant talent advantage over the team they're playing, and much more depth. So you're seeing that both the talent and the depth pay dividends for the Cavs and the Celtics. And I think for the last 3 months, we've talked about they're on a collision course for the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't think we've seen anything that's going to change that, but in my opinion, at least. But that said, the Pacers, and I have more to say on the Bucks later, but I'll say this about the Pacers-Bucks. Pacers made it to the Eastern Conference Finals last year before bowing out to Boston. The Pacers team can play. And I'm really curious, if I fast forward one round, how they'll match up and play against the Cavs in the next round. That could be quite the series, because the Pacers, like I said, can play. The Bucks are a mess. Like I said, I'll speak on that later. The best series in the first round in the Eastern Conference, though, is Detroit and the Knicks. And you touched on it, Zay, and I think you outlined it perfectly. When you look at the Pistons, they play with energy. They push the ball. Granted, they struggle to score at times, but Cade Cunningham is a star. Schroeder's been great. Tobias Harris has done his thing. Like, this is definitely going to be the most entertaining series in the East in this round. In the West, the Thunder just hammering the Grizz. I'll have more to talk about that later in the show as well. The most compelling Western Conference first round series to me is Denver and the Clippers. the first two matches have been absolute battles. And so, one, the Clippers kind of stole in game two, and the Nuggets erased a 13-point double-digit second-half deficit to win in overtime in game one. Lakers-Wolves, I'm going to disagree with you on this one. I think this is going to be a lengthy series. I say this because, while I still think the Lakers will win and that hasn't changed, the Wolves were able to split in L.A. with Ant Edwards literally doing not much. When your best player doesn't perform and you're still able to blow them out in game one, and then you're going to the T-Wolves, for sure the Wolves will take one of the next two. You can take that to the bank. Whether it be game three or game four, they're going to win one of those two at home. Why? Because the Lakers still only have three players. You know, granted, three really, really, really good ones to great ones, but they're a three-man roster, and they don't have the physicality inside. And Minnesota will pound them. The officials will allow them to pound them. And Luka's going to do his thing. They have no answer for Luka. He is a megastar. Reeves will be Reeves. LeBron has been mediocre for the first two games, and I don't really see anything changing there. And what's weird about LeBron in this series is I expect at 40-plus years old, physically, he's going to make mistakes. But the mental breakdowns are just absolutely mind-boggling to me. That's the part that he should have down. And just too many mistakes for a guy as great as he is. Not that it's all on him. Again, it's a three-man roster. But even Redick came out and said, Minnesota's a tough challenge because of how physical they are. Their length and their physicality is a problem. Give the Lakers credit. They made adjustments in game two. They played a much better game. What we would expect them to play, right? LeBron, Redick, they're two of the most cerebral people in the NBA. They're going to identify what you did and what you didn't do, and they're going to have a plan, and they did. But it's also the game within the adjustments. So what do we see now that the Lakers made adjustments? Do the Wolves run it back and just think that was an aberration, or what changes do they make? I'm curious to see what the T-Wolves with the home crowd, what they'll do. The Warriors, if Butler is out for the rest of the series, and we don't know, right? At this point, he's day-to-day as we monitor game three, and thankfully they had an extra day turnaround, which will help them as well. Make no mistake, if Jimmy Butler plays the rest of the series, the Warriors are going to beat the Rockets. If Jimmy Butler has not played the rest of the series, or most of the series, or half the series, the Rockets advance. So Butler's literally the difference whether they move on or not.
100% on the same page with that, BK. Now, there's also another set of playoff games going on right now, BK. And that is in the NHL. In the East, the Leafs are 2-0 over the Senators. Florida's 1-0 over Tampa Bay. Washington 2-0 over Montreal. Canes up 2-0 over the Devils. Out in the West, the Jets up 2-0 over the Blues. The Stars and the Avs 1-1. Vegas 1-1 with Minnesota. And the Kings up 1 over the Oilers. Do you see anything special? Now, look, I don't want to let the rabbit, you know, out of the hat. I know there's a special part of the show where you talk about things that you see that are special, but I got to ask, like, you know, you kind of threw something out there last year that if people hopped on, it put quite a few coins in pockets. Anything like that going on this year as we look at the first couple of games in? Anything that you're seeing that others might not quite see? Or anything that surprised you as we're going into, for some, game two, but for most, it will be game three coming up.
So I will give you an update during this broadcast. The Panthers just defeated the Lightning 2-0. So they're now up 2-0 on the Lightning. So as they head back to Florida. So not only did they take both two, but the next two are at home. So the Lightning are in big trouble. I know that was one of the three future speculations that I gave you. You know, we had the Avs plus 750, Vegas plus 1,000, and the Lightning plus 1,100. down 2-0, that's going to make the task pretty tough. I think the two surprises to me in the first round so far is how easily the Kings have handled the Oilers. The Kings are up 2-0, and they've really put it to them. Now, granted, they always say the series doesn't start until, you know, the home team loses a game, right? So at this point, the Kings just held serve. The Oilers have the next two at home. But losing 2-0 convincingly like they did was, I'm surprised. And then the other one is what we just talked about, the Lightning. They were the slight favorites to win this series. Down 2-0. But it's not even the result, Zay, that surprises me. It's if you watch these two games, two things are concerning. One, the Lightning just can't score goals. The forechecking and the physicality of the Panthers are just wearing them out. And the second thing is the Lightning power play is non-existent. You would think you and I were on the power play unit. That's how inept they've been, because you and I don't play hockey. So, you know, that's how, like, I watched two power plays tonight the Lightning had, where they didn't even get a shot on goal. Like, how do you do that with a man advantage in the playoffs? Like, that, I understand not scoring on a power play, but to not even, like, even remotely come close, like, that's a problem. And the other thing that I'll say that's surprising to me is just all the 2-0 series. The Leafs are up 2-0. They're ahead in game 3, 2-1 in Ottawa now. Florida 2-0, Washington 2-0, the Canes 2-0, the Jets 2-0. The Kings 2-0, like literally 6 of the 8 series are 2-0. So, you know, I think that's surprising to me is just how lack of drama we've had so far for the first couple games. The two best series, ironically, have been Vegas and Minnesota tied at 1. They got game 3 that's about to tip off here. And then the other one, the Avs about played the Stars in games 1 and 3. Game 1, they beat them down, but the Stars struck back in game 2 in overtime, and in game 3, same thing. Avs outplayed them, and the Stars stole another one. So the Stars are up 2-1 now. Give them credit, because they were a heavy underdog here, despite having home ice. But I think that would be my take. What do you see so far?
Well, I kind of feel like it's almost mirroring the NBA, so to speak, where they're the series that is just like, okay, can we send the children to bed? And then they're the series where it's like, oh, okay, this is a heavyweight bout, and I don't know who's going to win. Whoever tires out first, or whoever, you know, with hockey is one of those things where if the teams are anywhere close to being equal, it's not going to be about who's the better team. It's going to be about who made the least mistakes. And that tends to go towards coaching and veteran presence. So there's several different things that I'm looking at. But honestly, nothing too surprising. But I will say that I thought that the series, that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Kings and Oilers, is that a 2-0 series now?
Yes.
Okay. That was one of the series that I thought would end up going 2-0. Other than that, I mean, it's pretty much going in the direction that I kind of saw. Maybe not the way that I saw it happening. But the results are about what the first round is a lot easier to predict than going forward. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to the second round a lot more than the first round. Same as with the NBA, because most of the matchups, you kind of know what's going to happen. Like, unless there's a major injury, like a Jimmy Butler type of a situation. Unless you get something like that, you kind of know what's going to happen in the first round. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, but to put a bow on both.
And going back to your injury part, you know, it's something that I talked about a few shows ago with you know, the postseason. The NBA, one of the stories the last two postseasons has been injuries to key players, like stars, superstar players, and Tatum's dealing with a wrist injury, right? We really don't know how bad that it is. We know he's sitting out because he's able to, because they have no problem beating Orlando, so they can just rest for the next round. And to be honest with you, no matter whether they get the Knicks or the Pistons, they can rest for that round too. So,
I don't know.
And then you look at the Warriors, their issue with Butler. And then the other problem with the Celtics is, don't forget, Jaylen Brown needed injections on his knee. So the two best players on Boston are both now banged up. Now, don't get me wrong, Jaylen Brown, you know, the finals MVP with his 36-10 in game two, he did just fine. But the fact is, they're still dealing with something. The injuries are the key story to watch down the stretch, because I think while we want to talk about the teams, the talent, and the outcome of how they play, the health and availability of your best players is going to directly determine the outcome.
Agreed, 100%. Now it's time for the truth, and nothing but the truth. What we got up first, BK?
So, NFL draft, or if you're in Cleveland, the Super Bowl's tonight. So I was curious, speaking of those Browns, so are you surprised with the Browns' decision to trade down? Do you think they got it right? And what do you think about them taking defensive tackle Mason Graham from Michigan with the 5th overall pick? For those of you who don't know, the Browns had the number 2 overall pick. They traded down with Jacksonville. The Jaguars traded up and took two-way player Travis Hunter from Colorado with that number 2 selection. So what do you think about this?
I gotta be honest, I don't like it for either team. I'm not sure what the Jaguars are trying to do here. The reason I say that is we struck gold with Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU last year. So you have your number 1 wide receiver. I don't know why you not only draft a wide receiver at number 2, but trade up to get said wide receiver to be a wide receiver too.
Mm-hmm.
And a nickel corner on some packages. Like that, I don't understand the logic there. Like, I get it. You want to put Trevor Lawrence in a space where it's like, hey, kid, you have no more excuses. While at the same time, you may have been better off going with a Genty 5 versus giving up assets to get a number 2 wide receiver. And I say number 2 wide receiver because you can't get much better than what Brian Thomas did last year. So whatever expectations we have for Hunter, he's not that guy. I can tell you that right now. So that was weird to me. Cleveland, if you wanted to, you know, trade down, cool, no problem. I can see that. You have several holes to fill. But the defensive end, defense really isn't your issue. So whatever you were going to do probably should have been on offense. You could have gotten a quarterback. You could have gotten a running back. You could have gotten a wide receiver. Your whole offense needs to be revamped. You put Hunter in Cleveland without Cleveland giving up the pick. What he can do for them on offense makes him their number 1 wide receiver. Jerry Jeudy, their number 2. And then he's a 3rd down cornerback. I'm okay with that, but I don't see how both teams made the same mistake of reiterating at a position that you aren't weak at. You already got Myles Garrett as one of your ends, but you went with another end in Cleveland. You already got a number 1 wide receiver with Brian Thomas Jr., but you went with a wide receiver and you moved up to do it. Like, I don't know. That just didn't make sense to me. Maybe I'm missing something, and that's happened before. But as of today, I don't like it for either team.
So I'm with you to a point on both of these. I'm not really sure what Jacksonville is doing. Although in fairness, I don't know that they know what they're doing. So I think we're all equally confused. Whatever their plan is doesn't seem to really be working out in general. So a la like extending Trevor Lawrence when he's a mediocre quarterback and hasn't deserved the extension, not to harp back on that same soapbox, but it doesn't change the facts. But with the Browns, so here's the thing. From one aspect, it makes sense because you're trying to acquire draft assets in order to fill voids in surround yourself with as many great players or starters that you can to strengthen your team. In the Mason Graham case, he is a defensive tackle, so he's going to be an interior player that's going to help stop the run and be able to, you know, so he'll complement what Myles Garrett will do. My only issue with the Browns here, though, is this.
I thought they drafted a defensive end. I didn't realize it was a tackle. But still, yeah. I mean.
Mason Graham's a hell of a player. So they got a very good player there. My only thing for the Browns is, sorry, Browns fans, to go back to kind of House of Horrors, but you know, history repeats itself. And you go all the way back to when the Browns came back in 1999 and all the draft mistakes, right? And then all the patterns they've had of trading down and all the great players they've missed because they traded down. I'm just not a fan of trading down when you have a track record of messing it up. At this point, if I'm the Browns, I take the best available player at number two and call it a day, because at least I can hang my hat on that. If you trade down to number five, again, they got a solid player. I'm not ripping the player. And it'll definitely help that team. But is he going to be an as impactful player as that they got in someone else? And so they've missed on players like, you know, Donovan McNabb and LaDainian Tomlinson and Julio Jones. And I mean, I could go on for 2 hours. So, you know, that's my concern, is I just think when you struggle in the draft historically, it makes no sense to do what they did, knowing that, well, the past regime's failures aren't yours. It still doesn't change that from a fan perspective, and you know how rabid that fan base is.
For sure.
They don't,
I don't know. We'll see how it comes out in the end, but there are just so many more holes on the offensive side than there are on the defensive side for Cleveland, that I would think that if you have the opportunity to address, you know, one of those glaring issues on offense, that you would go that direction. Hey, what do you do? What do you do? Next. Which of these six NFL stars most need a ring to cement their legacy? Luka Doncic, James Harden, Donovan Mitchell, SGA, Jimmy Butler, Jalen Brunson. Who you got, why?
So we're going to do a little process of elimination. Okay. So the easiest one to get rid of is Jalen Brunson, right? I can't envision any pathway where he needs any kind of title to really change the narrative of where he's at. A title gives him a title, but it doesn't change what people view him.
Agreed.
So
making the Knicks a perennial playoff team does everything that he needs to be done for his reputation right now.
Correct. Yes. I mean, he's going to make them basically a top three or four seed every year in the East, and they're going to have a chance potentially to do something in the East, depending on how well they play in pieces, parts, and health, and other teams and whatnot. But him making the playoffs and playing as great as he does, Like, that's about all he needs to do. There's nothing more that needs to be said for him. If he gets one, great. If he doesn't, he doesn't. Now, I know Knicks fans don't want to hear that, but that's the reality of it. Jimmy Butler. I think that Jimmy Butler, a title would definitely help cement his legacy given all that he's achieved. But I wouldn't put him number one. SGA's still really young, so I'm not going to put that pressure on him. Granted, they need a deep, deep run this year, a 68-win team that won the West by like 16 games. Like, you better make a deep run. Into their credit, they've hammered the Grizz for the first two games, so they're doing their part. But we need a deep run from them to, you know, they need a deep run. Anything less than the conference finals would be a failure, and they really should make the finals given how many games they won. 68 team wins historically make it to the finals. They need to be that team. Although the West is tough because there's a lot of challengers out there for sure. The person that I'm ultimately going to put it on is, I now that he's a Laker, I think it's Luka. And not because him not having one is a knock, but it just means him with the team that he's on winning a title carries so much more cachet than any of these other players winning a title. It really does. And so, you know, because while the NBA doesn't really want to probably acknowledge this for fan interest purposes, but the NBA is really a two-team league. It's the Lakers and the Celtics. They're the teams that have won the most titles by far and above everyone else. Those are the two teams that move the needle more than anyone else. A Laker title means a lot, and Luka's, at this point, the best player on the Lakers.
I see where you're coming from, but I disagree based on the question. So if I'm looking at who most needs a ring to cement their legacy, it's only one answer. That's James Harden. That's because legacy and longevity tend to go together. All of these other guys other than James Harden, I can't see any of them not having a good 10 years left. James Harden might not be able to get to the playoffs again in his career, and he hasn't won a championship. He hasn't been to a championship game. He hasn't been instrumental in a team making a major playoff run. So if we're talking about legacy, like, 5 years down the road, any of these other guys can win a championship and cement their legacy. James Harden don't have another 5 years in the NBA. So for that reason, I'll say James Harden has it's most important for him this year on a couple of fronts. The best player on the team that he plays for normally isn't healthy, so you better get it while the getting's good. And he doesn't necessarily play as well in the playoffs as he has thus far. So again, get it while the getting is good. That's kind of where I'm at as far as who needs a ring to cement their legacy at this point.
I'm not mad at it. It makes a lot of sense. I definitely see that for sure. Well, last but not least in the truth, but nothing but the truth, we're going to talk a little NBA playoff dangerous dark horses. Which of these three are the most dangerous, say, the Pacers, Warriors, or Clippers? Who you got?
Well, BK, I hate to hedge my bet here, but the most important question about your question is, do the Warriors have Butler or not? Because if they don't, it's easily the Clippers. Pacers, they're going to do about what they did last year. And maybe not even that, depending on if you have major injuries from other teams, because that had quite a bit to do with it. And they are a good team now. Don't hear what I'm not saying. They remind me kind of the Raptors that came out of nowhere, but I don't think they quite have a Kawhi currently playing for the Pacers. So unless there's a major injury with the Celtics, I don't see how the Pacers would be able to get to the finals to be able to win.
Yeah, so if I were to... So for me, the answer is the Clippers, even with Jimmy Butler. And I say that because... Okay. I say that because the Clippers are, with Kawhi and James Harden, they're scary good. And the Nuggets are a tough matchup, for sure. I mean, anytime you're dealing with Jokic, that's never an easy bargain, as the whole league knows. But the Clippers are scary good. I think for me, outside of OKC, I think they have the, from a likelihood of making the finals, for me, I think they are the second best team by a close margin, not some big margin. But I put the Clippers and the Lakers in the Warriors if they're completely healthy. All three of them are, I think, in a dogfight for that number two position. They're all equal challengers. And the Nuggets are a little bit behind that because I still think they're in disarray. While they have Jokic, Murray comes and goes. Their coaching got and GM got fired late in the year. Like, they just have that internal, and I haven't been impressed with the interim coach. So, like, I just don't know how that's going to really work for them. And the Pacers, it's just going to be hard for them because while they can give the Cavs a series in the next round, from a talent and depth standpoint, the Celtics specifically, but also the Cavs, are just better than they are. And I think it's going to be hard for them to get through both of them in the absence of, like you said, significant injuries. And I mean, like, Tatum and Brown are really out, Mitchell and Garland go out, or Mitchell and Mobley go out, or some combination of those players. Like, barring that, it's too much of a gap.
Great.
But so to me, it's the Clippers.
I definitely agree. There's not really, I'm trying to think if there's, could you consider the Rockets to be a dark horse?
You could, but my issue with them is they're young. And while they're really well coached and play elite defense, they have a hard time scoring. So if you were to play against OKC or play against Kawhi and James Harden, who can both go for 30 a night, or you play Luka and LeBron and Reeves, who can any one of them go for 30 a night? Like, you know, how are you going to deal with those teams when you struggle to score? You know, the math just, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but the math just doesn't math. If Luka scores 35 and Reeves has 25 and LeBron has 25, which are all reasonable possibilities, how are the Rockets going to score 85 with that roster?
I mean, you're not wrong. I can see that.
And I'm also not going to go against my pick. I still think the Warriors are going to beat the Rockets. And that's the other piece. At this point, I'm operating on the premise that Butler's going to, I mean, a contusion is a contusion, right? He's got 2.5 days to rest, almost 3 full days by the time they tip off. I expect him to play. So,
I mean, but that injury is one of those things that you, like, there's nothing you can do about it. With the sprain, you can get like a shot or something, or, you know, if you got a little knee issue or something, or if it's a pain tolerance type of a deal. But like, if you can't even walk straight because your tailbone is messed up, like you can't just, that's not one of those I can gut it out and still perform the same way type of issues. So it's, I hope he's at least 80%. I'll take 80% of him over a lot of players any given night. So,
no, for sure.
It is now time for the funnest part of the show, as far as I'm concerned. Top five all time of something. This one, BK, I did a little different, but it'll make sense. This one is the top five things I would do with $1 million. So instead of it being a ranking, I did it in the order of which I would do it. So it's not that the first thing is the most important and the last thing, or the first thing is the least important and the last thing is the most important. It's the actual order that I would do things with this newfound money. So yeah, just want to put that out there.
All right. Fair enough.
Number one.
It wouldn't be this segment if we didn't one of us didn't have a disclaimer. That's like a tradition.
This is true.
So for me, my number five, which I know you'll love.
Okay.
And this is an easiest bet of the day. I would invest some money in our podcast. We're gonna make it completely monetize it and make it super legit where, you know, we'll turn into stars power because of that. So that would be my number five.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Number five for me, immediate vacation to figure out what I'm going to do next. That would be the first thing that I would do. And so again, this isn't my ranking, but this is the order of operation, if you will. Vacation. Figure it out while I'm there.
I love it. Days off
for charity.
Number four for me is donate money to charity. I think that it's something I wish that all the multi-billionaire celebrities would do. And I know they do a lot of philanthropy things, but, you know, I just think it's important to give back. I feel like you and I, Zay, are really lucky and fortunate. I know things could always be better, but they could be way, way worse. And so with that spirit in mind, there's people that I even know personally that are going through a lot. And so anything that could be done to help them would be a huge thing. So donating to charities as a cause that, you know, kind of tugs at your heartstrings to give back is my number four.
Actually, that was not my number four, but the second thing that I would do. So again, the first thing that I'm doing is going on vacation to figure out what to do next. The next thing that I am going to do is give to charity/church. Yeah. So for the same reasons that BK eloquently put out there that I shall not rehash, but yeah, next up with me would be charity and church. What would be number three on your list, BK?
My number three is what your first thing was. I would travel. Aruba, Bora Bora, Europe, Hawaii, I would be living it up. So I would be doing some traveling because you and I both know in our careers, Zay, we do not have the ability to do a whole lot of traveling with the amount of weeks we get off. So I would take full advantage of that $1 million and I'd be doing some traveling.
I can see it. I can see it. I can definitely see that. The next thing that I would do is set aside whatever it's going to take to ensure that my children can go to college debt. So that's the next thing that I would do. But here's the thing. This is also kind of a tradition here. My number three could and would actually fit in nicely with my number two, which is something that you already put out there, which is investing. Because there's certain investments that you can have that will set up that college fund, but it'll also be interest bearing in the meantime. So it's just not, you know, burying the money in the sand and saying, here, you know, take that when you need it. So that would kind of combine my number two and my number three. So, and then obviously investing in other areas and arenas, such as you said, such as the podcast and a whole bunch of other stuff that we just kind of have to figure out. But so go ahead and give us your number two.
Yeah. So my number two would be all of you guys have, unless you're new to the program, you know that this is coming. I would buy a beach house. You know, like the country song says, toes in the water, ass in the sand. there's nothing, no day better than a beach day. So I am a big fan of being at the beach. So I would have one, and I would have a house at the beach. That's my number two.
My number one, house and cars. Nothing fancy. You can do a lot with a little in the state that we live in, as far as our houses are concerned. You can get a mini mansion here for what most people in other states would, you know, be paying an arm and a leg for. So, yeah, I upgraded house, and just to, you know, I've never been big on cars. You know, you get me where I need to go and back, I'm good. But since I'm a new millionaire, I would make sure that it's something that is going to have value. But true to my normal nature, I'm cheap, so I'm not going to spend very much on a car. I would probably get a certified used Honda. Like what is this, 2025? I get a 2024 certified used Honda and keep it pushing. Like, that's what I would do. Now my wife is probably going to want a sports car.
So it's funny you say that, Zay, because I don't know if you know this or saw, but I was busy on my day off today. And not
where are you now?
And not the usual pickleball, though I did that this morning as well, because that's a tradition like any other. But I did, in fact, buy a new car today.
Did you?
The Camaro is gone.
You got rid of the so no more.
No more top down.
No more top down rides. No more.
And ironically, I got a Honda.
Did you now?
So, you know, it's like, you know, it's like you were in my head or something.
Hey.
So.
Great vehicles. They last a long time. You take care of it, it'll take care of you.
And by the way, I am not a millionaire. So let's just point that out for the record for all you good people out there. They're nowhere close. Just want to make sure that I clean up that loose end there for you. But number one for me, I would invest the rest. You know, I would invest a lot of that money, and so that way I would have it for a long time to come.
Agreed. So it's money time, BK.
Whew.
Time for you to do what you do. Whew. Well, there are a lot of things that you do very well, but the thing that's most beneficial to everyone else and you do just as well, it's BK's best bets. So what do we have going on? What are the best bets?
What I hear you saying, Zay, is there's no I in team, but there is a me.
Look, there's a me in money. I can tell you that.
Amen. So I got three plays for you. One of them I had to wipe out because with the integrity of the show, one of the games is already going on as we speak, and since it's already started, it's not fair to put that play out there. So I will select three that you can all bet on. Two NBA games and one NHL. We'll start with the ice. Personally, I've been hammering this series the whole postseason. The Hurricanes, the Carolina Hurricanes, are up 2-0 over the Devils. They go to New Jersey for game three tomorrow night, or tonight for purposes of when you guys get to hear this. But the Canes are so much better than the Devils. They've just controlled and dominated the series so far. And even though it's a must-win game for New Jersey, not wanting to go down 0-3 at home, they're still missing their best player. And without that, it's going to be hard. Give me the Canes in the money line to make it 3-0. They'll take a commanding 3-0 lead over the Devils come Friday night. And then to the hardwood, the two teams I've been talking about a lot tonight, the Cavs and the Celtics. The Cavs go on the road. We're going to take the Cavs to the money line to beat the Heat. The Cavs have more depth. They knock down threes. The scoring can come from anywhere in places. Jared Allen can have a game. You know, we know what Donovan Mitchell can do. We know what Darius Garland can do. We know what Mobley can do. Ty Jerome went nuts in game one, I believe, with 26. So, you know, you just never know who or how much the Cavs are going to do it. And they just rain threes. But speaking of raining threes, there's no team better than doing that in the NBA than the Celtics. The Celtics knock down and shoot a lot of threes. I like the Celtics money line on the road to beat Orlando. Again, I know Tatum is unlikely to play in game three. I do feel like in our confessional that if he needed to play, he could. I think this is a precautionary, we don't need you to play, so you'll rest some more kind of deal. But Porzingis and, you know, Derek White and a certain guy named Jaylen Brown, I think they'll be more than enough firepower to shut down Banchero and Wagner. Other than those two, Orlando struggles to score. Give me the Celtics and the Cavs money line, the Canes money line. Those are this week's best bets.
And now on to the can't miss weekly rants. It's going to be quick for me, BK. And I may have even ranted about this previously. I don't even remember, but I know it's been getting on my nerves this week. All the transfer portal and NIL stuff, like, it feels like a Wild Wild West type of situation. I'm glad that the athletes are finally kind of getting their worth. But, like, we're running now into hostage situations. We're running into situations where, you know, kids are changing schools every year. Like, we're, like, sometimes a good idea doesn't necessarily need to be the polar opposite of what you thought was a bad idea, because then you just create a whole nother set of problems. And I kind of feel like that's where we are currently with the state of the NIL and the transfer portal. Also, unfortunately, we don't have an adult in the room because nobody trusts the NCAA. So it's like, who's waiting on whom to fix what first? Like, how do you trust the NCAA to fix anything? I don't. But how long do you just let it go in this free-for-all type of a situation? Like, because it's going to cause more harm than good. Like, they're going to be some athletes that get left out in the cold. Like, one thing about it, you give rich people that have been rich for a very long time enough time to figure something out, and they'll figure out how to make it not work in your favor. And unfortunately, it's going to be some four-star, three-star, four-star, five-star athlete that gets blackballed because of the shenanigans with the negotiations. And it's going to be tantamount to things that we've seen in other sports before. So it can happen. I don't want it to get that far before something is done, because you aren't going to hamstring these people but for so long before they're like, okay, let's put a little kibosh on this real quick. Some cold water, if you will. How they would go about it, I don't know. But eventually, they figure that part out, and it didn't take nearly as long to figure that half of it out as it did the, well, we'll give you some money now part of it. Trust me. That took since college sports started to today. So whatever that date is until 2023 or whatever it was when NIL finally actually went out there, it took that long to get paid legally, put it that way, without repercussions. But at this point, it's going to take maybe 2 years for them to figure out how to rein this thing in. So, but I think it's necessary. So that's all I got for you.
That's fair. So mine, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you guys will hear this Friday morning and listen to it Friday morning. We record it Thursday night. So the draft started not too long before our show tonight. And I'm going to repeat a pet peeve of mine about the draft process that needs to change. I know it's great for the NFL Network and for NFL talking heads to have something to talk about for month after month. But we need to stop overvaluing the physical attributes of these draft prospects. Let's go back to what the tape shows. Because the best indication is not how big your hand is or how fast you run or can you lift, do 50 bench presses it's 7 billion pounds. Okay. What can you do on tape against equal or better competition in college? That's what people are going to be able to evaluate and use it towards the NFL. Not how did you answer a question in an interview, or, you know, unless it was a crazy answer, right? Like, you know, if you really mess up, that's different. But, you know, let's do the right thing. Let's realize that what's important is what you do on the field and what, how those skills translate to what you're looking for in your organization, and not look to devalue players based on Mickey Mouse things that at the end of the day really don't matter.
I cannot agree with you more, which is why there should be less time between when the NFL season ends and the draft, because they get into so many outlier things that have nothing to do with the football that you just watch this guy play for a minimum of 3 years. Now, all of a sudden, none of that matters, but only what they did on one day at the Underwear Olympics is what matters. Like, it just, come on, make it make sense. You're never going to run 40 yards as fast as you can without being touched. So why does it matter what your 40-yard time is? Like it's, never mind. I'm not going to rent your rent. I agree with you. I'll leave it at that. That pretty much wraps it up for this week. We will be back to you on next Wednesday with the Fantasy Football Show and with the flagship show, the Gospel Sports Truth Podcast, on next Friday. Until then, if you have not subscribed or followed, make sure you do that. And above all else, remember, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth.
We out.
Later, y'all.